Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 263, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam show. We are live in living color, getting funky like a monkey, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank every single person that contributed to the five-year anniversary show last week. It was so amazing. I had so much fun. It went overtime. It was great. A lot of publicity. And I want to thank every single person that had any type of affiliation, any kind thoughts, any type of positive just thoughts and comments toward the five-year anniversary. I want to thank all the fans, the listeners of the show that had so many positive things to say about the show. It was so awesome. It was just Chris Sabin, Marty Elias, the panel. It was really, really, really fun. So thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we have such a fun, action-packed show tonight with a lot of controversy and, of course, PG style as we do every week. But I got some awesome people, two of my favorite people to interview. I know you ask, Chris, why are these the two of the favorite people that you've interviewed on your show? I've had a handful of people that's been on my show within the past 5 years and a week now. On two separate occasions, I've had numerous people come on the show that I love interviewing. I've had two parts of it. But these two people who I'm going to interview here in just a few actually win an award. They don't know this. I think the last time they won an award for being the only time that I've interviewed two people at once, now they're winning another award of being the only two people in 5 years of the Pancakes and Power Slam show, the only two people that have been on the show three separate occasions. That's awesome. Well, they both have been on the show once alone and now twice together again. So for the third time, I am so excited to introduce the dream team, if you will, the Minnesota dream team of Ken Anderson and Sean Daivari. How are you two tonight?
I'm so excited now. I can't believe we won an award. Oh, my God.
Congratulations.
Dude, that's just like when a promoter gives you a belt in lieu of a raise. Me? Really?
Or exactly. It's like fool's gold. It's like you look at it, there's no value to it, but at least it looks good for a little bit.
Do I get a medal?
If you go to the academy and sit down and take a dump in the bathroom, you're looking dead eye to eye, locked on with our student of the month. That's how valuable an award is.
sounds good, man. Well, I appreciate the awesome value and the award that you've equated to my award. I think that's a very good equation. thank you so much. But yeah, we got a lot to talk about tonight. I want to thank the both of you for coming on the show again. Like I said, two of my favorite people to interview. Both of you are the only ones who've ever been on my show three times, so that's saying something. I don't know. I think I'm closer to 100 interviews now, so I'm just looking forward to both of you and what you have to say about the Academy. Let's start off with that. Let's start off with just, I mean, I remember when I was speaking to Sean and Ken individually, and you guys were envisioning the Academy. It was before it opened, and then I spoke to you a little bit after it opened. And now you guys are well-established in Minnesota. So let's start with Sean. Just let us know just the success that the Academy has done since you've opened it.
I mean, I guess I can't really label it a success because success, I guess, is in the eye of the beholder. But as far as the number of trainees we have, I think we might have the biggest one in the country if that's your measuring stick of success. Nice. You know, we had 42 kids in our first class. Our second class just started, so we'll see who hangs into there. You know, I don't know any other wrestling school. I've never been to any other wrestling school that have that many kids, A, fresh out the gate, B, like, accumulated over the whole time. So if that's your measuring stick of success, you know, we're doing all right. And if your measuring stick of success is the quality of training, like, I also on top of that, you know, we got Ken there on every training session. Eric Cannon comes in when he's not booked. Molly Holly comes by. I'm there when I can. The other trainers we have coming in, you know, Mickey James came in and did a seminar with us, Shelton Benjamin. If that's your measuring stick of success, we're doing pretty successful there. If you're measuring success, stick of success is not spending a lot of time there and making a ton of money. Me and Ken are the most unsuccessful people on the planet.
Ken, would you agree?
We also, like, I will say that we have a lot more retention than we thought we would have. We just didn't know what to expect, really. But a lot of our students have stuck around. And a lot of our students are, I think, going to be somewhat successful for different reasons. And, you know, we got one group of students that was, you know, really athletically gifted, and everything you tell them, they get it on the first time. But they might not necessarily get the mental aspect of what we do. And the other people might not be gifted as gifted athletically, but they really grasp the mental game. And then you've got some people that have a blend of the two. So pretty good mix.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really good. So do you guys have any short-term goals? Are you looking for some of your kids to be picked up by any, I guess you can say major promotion? I mean, you know, like you said, Sean, I mean, this major, I guess, is relative. But, you know, we all know, as far as USD, the quote unquote major promotions, what are your short term goals? Let's start with Ken.
I think obviously to have one of our students come from the Academy and, you know, make it to the grand stage would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of already have, you know, me and Ken's first trainee is Aria, my brother, you know, what year was it, Ken? Like, you know, I think it was like 6-7 years ago, there was a wrestling school in Northeast Minneapolis that me and then, you know, when I was on the road or when Ken wasn't on the road, at the time Shelton lived in Minneapolis, when he was on the road, we would go to train Aria. And, you know, he just got picked up by WWE this past November. I don't know about you, Ken, but that's the first person that I've ever said that, you know, I started training.
Yeah, I'd say he's a prodigy.
Yeah. Him and Hornswoggle.
Yeah, the midget.
Really? You trained Hornswoggle?
Yeah, well, it would just be, you know, not in a tradition, not in a sense like I'm training kids now, where it was like, you know, three nights a week, a regimented schedule, an actual curriculum or anything like that. It was just every time we'd be on wrestling shows together, I'd kind of take them under my wing and show them things.
Yeah.
show them what I knew, you know, and I didn't know everything at the time. I still don't know everything now, but the stuff that I did know, I would try to pass on that knowledge to him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'll tell you, he was pretty damn successful. I think he was the only little person in WWE history to have a full-time contract, in fact, especially have a contract for, he was there for 10 years.
Yeah.
And he was the only midget.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was cruiserweight champion. I mean,
oh, was he really? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He was the last cruiserweight champion in 2007.
He was in DX. He was in freaking DX for a while.
He was in DX. Yeah, he was. He was Vince McMahon's illegitimate son.
It's kind of funny that I remember people always ask me, like, my favorite shit stock that I did at WWE. And, like one of my favorite moments, I can't even remember what I did. When I watch it on YouTube or something, it's like an out-of-body experience because I didn't actually do it, but one of my favorite moments is the WrestleMania we did in Detroit when, like, Ken, Punk, and the Midget were all in the ring at the same time, pretty much in the finishing, you know, segment or the finishing, you know, the go-home of the match.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
I was sitting in the locker room watching it, and I was so much more geeked out than everybody else for different reasons. And it was a great finish, and everyone was just kind of like, oh, cool, these are the guys they're going to run with for the next 365 days. But, like, for me, it was even more special than that.
You know, the crazy thing, too, is, like, when we were there and it was at that point in our career where, like, I didn't really think, like, wow, we fucking started out together. Sorry, I didn't mean to swear. I didn't think at the time, like, wow, we started out together. But Punk, we were up at the top of that ladder, and the very last spot was Punk and I were trading blows back and forth, and then I finally hit him. He fell off the ladder and I grabbed the briefcase. And in that moment, he just said to me, he said, you know, under his breath, he said, wow, we've come a long way since Whitewater, Wisconsin, huh? Don't you think? You know, and it was just kind of a really cool moment.
Yeah, but, absolutely. Yeah, that's really cool. Sean, you were talking about geeking out, watching stuff. I get so I crack up when you put Grado over. I think it's so cool that you put him over so much. And I think that
he's amazing. He's my favorite thing to watch. I've never seen him wrestle, but he's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's really, really cool that you put him over so much. I mean, like, it's just
things playing. Like with Grado, I for some reason never heard of the guy. Like, I should have, you know, like, usually if something's good, and he was in TNA at the time, and I guess they're doing the British boot camp thing, and like, I just hadn't seen any of it or heard of it, so. For some reason, by never hearing of it, I had a, like, it was like I was seeing it for the first time with no one else's opinion, no one else's input, advice. You know, I didn't have all my buddies like, dude, you guys see this guy from Scotland, he's awesome, but like nothing. I'm just like tuned in and I see this thing completely unadulterated with zero influence of any kind. And I'm like, this is amazing. And I'm telling the whole world about this guy that just blew me away. And everybody's like, dude, you've known about this guy for like 2 years.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Once Sean sees Grado wrestle, it's gonna all be over.
No, it will be. I don't need to. It's a very specific thing that he does in my life, and that is when I'm just like bummed out over stupid things that aren't even worth getting bummed out about. He just makes me laugh, and I go, "Oh my god, I can't believe I'm bugging out."
Yeah,
over
he is very comical. Some
crap that's not even, it's so insignificant in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, Ken, you make a good point. In the ring, not the most technically sound person.
But he doesn't need to be.
He doesn't,
yeah, but
he's like, not trying to be either. He doesn't need to be, and he's not trying to be.
Exactly.
It would actually ruin it, I think. Like,
I think so, too.
The connection that he has with the fans is so, like, they always try and say, like, Daniel Bryan is, like, you know, the guy that came out of the crowd. Like, he's, like, one of us. I'm like, not really. He's kind of the best wrestler in the world. Like, they're not, you know, there's not 100,000 of the best wrestlers in the world just sitting in the stands at WrestleMania.
True.
But then, like, you know, but Grado really is, like, he could be sitting in the front row or he could hop the rail and get in the fence and it's the same guy. That's why I think he has a more real connection. He has the same connection to me when I view it that, like, Eugene had. But everyone knew that Eugene was a character. Like, but it was like, you know, the character of Eugene was something the crowd was like, oh, he's just a guy just chasing his dream. He really, really likes doing this. And Grado's the actual version of that. Obviously, Eugene has more mental faculties than Grado does, but.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very true. Speaking of putting people over, both of you, I'm sure, can put the Undertaker over leaps and bounds. Both of you had very interesting moments within WWE with The Undertaker. Daivari, you had a long string of being involved with The Undertaker, with Muhammad Hassan. Anderson, you beat The Undertaker, so that was that's huge. So let's start with Sean. I mean, what are your thoughts on The Undertaker, and do you think this is it for him?
No, I don't think this is it for him. I think this is it for him as far as being having that expectation of working every WrestleMania, but I don't think I don't think that was the last match.
Good, interesting take. What are your experiences with Undertaker throughout you running with him in the WWE and just the feud that you had with him?
He was the only other person that I knew that was like, he kind of just treated, I noticed that the guys that he worked with, he just treated them like equals. And Kurt Angle would do that too. But I think Kurt understood that he was special than, you know, he was. Everybody else. I think Kurt just assumed everybody was the same. But I think Taker was very, very well aware that he was head and shoulders above everybody else on the totem pole, but he still treated the guys he was working with as equal.
That's
awesome.
This
is killing me. Do you got some sort of crazy like feedback coming out of this phone or something?
Yeah, I can hear one of you have like wicked feedback.
Yeah, I hear a bunch of feedback coming out of your end there, Sean. I will say,
go ahead, Tim.
So I'll say that I think, first of all, I'll go on record and say that I believe that that was his last match. I think that's the way that he wanted to go out. I know, like, he's just super old school. You know, there's a certain code that a time-honored tradition that we follow in the business, that when you have your last match, you go out looking at the lights. And he did that, and the fact that he, you know, took the gloves off and took the hat off and everything and left everything in the center of the ring, I felt like that was him saying, that's it, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, if that's the case, I think it's fantastic because, you know, I heard Penn Jillette once say that, was it Frank Sinatra? Frank Sinatra just kept going and kept going way beyond his prime. Like, he should have retired.
You know why?
Well, that, why? Because he has to?
Because he did it his way. Ba-doom.
So,
finally, it's really entertaining.
But, then there's those performers that go out, I think, at the right time. Like Austin, Austin went out right at the right time. Had he stuck around, we would have started to see like, oh, he's getting old. He's not moving around as
true.
As much as he used to be able to. So,
absolutely.
So let me rephrase that. Sorry, go ahead, Ken.
No, go ahead. Because I was going to go on to something completely different.
I was going to say, I agree with Ken 100%. That is Undertaker's intention. He believes this is his last match. This is the way he wants to go out. I also know Vince McMahon, and Vince McMahon has every year since Shawn Michaels retired called him to come back and do a match, and Shawn has said no. He also asked Steve to do a match, and Steve has said no. I know the relationship between Taker and Vince, and I think if Vince calls him and says, hey, I want you to have a match, I don't know that Undertaker is going to say no just because he's, Kurt Angle tells an awesome story that Taker was sleeping on a flight once, and him and Vince were fucking wrestling around. And they were just playing around like wrestling, but, kind of shooting in the aisle. And he said Taker was asleep, and he wakes up, and he saw Kurt on top of Vince, and he thought it was like an actual fight. He choked, Kurt out. Like, that's kind of like his loyalty to Vince, or when there was maybe a possibility of Shawn not wanting to do a job for Steve at that WrestleMania 14. Taker was the guy on standby to make them do business because that's kind of like his loyalty to Vince.
Yeah.
It was my understanding. I wasn't there for any of it. So I feel like if that same phone call comes that Shawn says no to, that Austin says no to, that Ric Flair says no to, I don't know that Taker will say no. If the phone call doesn't come, I do think Taker did that his last night.
I think both of you make very good points. I'm gonna side more with Ken on this one, just because I think because of that, I think since Taker's such a company guy, I think Taker, and I've said this on my show like a week or two ago, I think Taker had everything to do. Last week, because it was right after Taker lost. I think Taker had everything to do with the match being on last. I think he had everything to do with Roman Reigns being the guy he wanted to put over. I think he had everything to do with just the ceremonial exit that he had. I agree with Ken. I think that Taker really wanted to put Reigns over, and I think that he wanted it. He probably lobbied that to put it the last match, JR to call it. And I think
I'm agreeing with you guys. I'm agreeing with everything you're saying. I'm saying that is 100% his intentions. I'm saying 2 years from now, when Vince calls him and says, "I need you for a match," that I don't.
Yeah, but one of the things that Taker has been, regardless of what he's been asked to do, one of the things that he's really been good at is protecting his character and protecting his sort of legacy. And even when he's asked to do silly things from time to time, I think he would have balls to say no. It wouldn't even be balls. It would just be like, no, I'm not going to do that, and here's why. He would rationalize and make sense. I feel like if he would come back now, after he basically hung his boots up in the ring, in my opinion, it should have been done that way. They should have slid a stool into him, and he should have taken his boots off and left his boots in the ring. Because they always say, like, you know, we're going to hang up the boots, whatever, right? But whatever, that's just me, you know, playing armchair quarterback. But I feel like if he were to come back now, it would be sort of people wouldn't take him as seriously.
I agree.
They wouldn't believe him.
I got it. Like, what WrestleMania just happened? 33?
34? Yeah,
33.
33
was the
33.
Yep.
Wait, so 35 after, I bet you we'll see a Taker match.
See, here's the thing. I think Ken makes a lot of good points, because we saw that with Flair. When, you know, I think it was a great send-off with Flair with Michaels, and then every single Flair match after that, people were just like, again. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm a huge Jay Lethal fan. He put over Jay Lethal. But still, it was one of those things where, you know, Flair was like, we don't want to see Flair again after that big send-off. Like people want to see Michaels in the ring again, but people like me respect the heck out of Michaels because he keeps saying no. Like 26 was 26. That was it for him. Like 7 years ago was it. He hasn't wrestled in 7 years. So I'm a big fan of it. I don't think so either. I agree. I don't think so either. And with that same logic with Michaels, I think it's with Taker, especially because he's the guy who wants, like Ken said, I think he wants to protect his character. He's never on interviews. He never tweets. You know, he embodies just really protecting your character. And I agree with that. Real quick, let's get into JBL. Let's start with Mr. Sean Daivari. You know, you don't have to be in the know too much to know that there has been a firestorm of media attention on Mauro Ranallo, who's I think is a fantastic announcer. There was an interview that he had on Bringing to the Table, and reportedly some other things that sparked Ranallo and I'm about to become a doctor in psychology and have a second master's in clinical mental health counseling. So depression and bipolar, those are things that you can never make fun of. And those are very, very serious things. And from what I heard from all the reports, there were talks that the JBL comments sparked another episode of his the depression.
What were the comments? What were the comments?
I wrote about it. He it was on Bring It to the Table. I have to look it up real quick live here. But he said something. I don't know exactly what the comments were verbatim, but it was about him tweeting. It was about him tweeting. Marwin Allo was tweeting a lot. He tweets a lot. I mean, he tweeted a lot about just stuff outside the WWE as far as like celebrities and things like that. He retweets just different things. He was voted announcer of the year for the Wrestling Observer. And basically JBL said that it was an internet poll. He didn't want to, you know, call the poll out for what it was. And he was just basically saying that he hates that he uses Twitter so much and does that. So that I'll find it.
I already did. In the time it took you to not get to the point, I read the whole interview.
Did you you read the thing? Oh, okay, I actually have it here from my piece that I wrote a couple of days ago.
I read three different articles about it in the time it took you to not tell what happened.
I'm live and I've been doing this podcast. It's called Filler, Sean. See, Ken has a podcast. He knows what I was doing. But he says the man.
Now the thing is that Sean is extraordinary at multitasking. So he can have a conversation with two different people at once and read. He can type, look up an article on the internet and do something else on a different device at the same time. And
that's awesome. I just did that. I just found the quote too. It says, quote, the man has 180-something thousand tweets, and by the time this show airs, maybe 200-something thousand. That is a problem, okay? And he retweets some internet poll. We have, what, 2 million people who watch SmackDown United States alone, and you have some internet poll with 12 people on it, which is not an internet poll with 12 people on it, but it's the, you know, Dave Meltzer, Wrestling Observer. He was announcer of the year, and JBL has been voted one of the worst announcers of the year within the past couple of years. And JBL's been voted one of the worst announcers, and Ronaldo was the best.
I think John's
John's okay. I don't think he's the worst personally, but. A lot of people are getting tired of it because they think it's dated. But
and I don't want to talk about it because I don't know the guy personally, and I don't want to say that like he's a. I'm going to lay forth a criticism that I don't mean that he's a bad person, but like his announcing actually drives me crazy. But that fake wrestling, that old school radio announcer voice, like, drives me insane.
Mamma mia!
You know, it's that, I don't know what it is, but radio people, they go to college and they must take a class on how to have that voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if they.
It's called Transatlantic.
What's that?
It's called Transatlantic. It was a dialect they created and the. Her transition from England to the United States, they made that dialect for radio because they couldn't get coast to coast. So people from the South and the East and the North, they all can understand each other. And this transatlantic dialect was invented for the radio. So somebody, you would know that it's a celebrity person, like someone super smart. They used to teach it in private schools and when if you were like, you know, rich and stuff. So that way radio then would go from the East Coast to the West Coast. Everybody could understand it, even though there's different dialects in like the 1920s.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's why if you ever watch
those old hockey movies, that's why you have people like Casey Kasem.
Right. But I feel like that is that we don't need that anymore. We don't need the everybody understands it pretty much, right?
Mm. No, yeah, of course. It's so stupid that it's one of those things that me and Ken always talk about. It's the way it's done now. So all we do is just keep doing it the way it's done instead of throwing out the playbook and starting over.
I guess, you know, I've been a journalist for a while, so I look at it from different lenses. I like it. I still like it as a fan. Just because, not necessarily that dialect, I like the passion that comes with that. Like with JR, he has that Southern drawl, and it's not necessarily a radio voice, but there's still so much passion in it that you engulf people, and they feel the energy. Like with people,
well, that's just
like,
it. He doesn't have. He still has that. You can still have that passion. He doesn't have that radio voice. He's just got a regular voice. The way that JBL or the way that JR talks when he's excited about something in real life is the way that he talks when he's on the radio or when he's doing his podcast, when he's calling a match.
Yeah. But when I see, when I hear people like Michael Cole, and I'm not anti Michael Cole, but I'm not anti Tom Phillips. I think Tom Phillips actually grown a lot. But just as far as like play by play, I'm just not a big fan because I don't feel the energy that I've gotten with JR for so long. And, you know, even with, I wasn't the biggest Gordon Solie fan, but he was so memorable to me when he would, you know, the belly to belly suplex, you know, and it was just like just the passion and the energy as opposed to this is just another city. This is just another arena. And I'm just doing my job. You know, JR has even said that before. I've been to live Q&As with him, and I love just soaking in what he has to say. And, you know, he's talked about that with wrestlers and announcers and things like that, just coming in and just clocking in and clocking out. You can feel that with wrestlers and announcers. And I think with Mauro, to me, you know, I didn't feel that. I felt like he was a mark.
Oh, no, he's definitely not punching the clock. Well, he's definitely not punching the clock. You can tell.
Right.
Exactly. He's putting effort into it. I understand your point, though.
I definitely understand. So, Ken, what are your thoughts on just based on that, based on the information that I just stated, and just your experience with JBL? What are your thoughts?
You know what? I mean, he was a guy that he's old school and he protects. You know, his concept was to protect the business from goofs getting involved in the business and people he would say something to somebody like I just read something that Justin Roberts said that
the passport.
He always called him but he also did a bunch of other stuff. He called him names and told him that he should kill himself every day or whatever, like
right.
He would say stuff like that. But the minute somebody would fire back at him or just no-sell it, like, it would be fine. He wouldn't keep hammering. It was I don't know. I'm not saying that his way is right, but people are really, really sensitive nowadays to everything.
Interesting.
It's insane. Me and John have a different sense of humor, but both of it, the central part of it, as far as what's entertaining to us, is just making somebody miserable. The way I make somebody miserable is different than the way that John makes someone miserable. But when somebody no-sells me, it just takes all the fun out of it for me, and I stop because I go find another victim. And it's one of those things that whenever I hear stuff about John being a bully to whoever and the specific names that come out, like, I don't know what he did to Justin Roberts, but, you know, whenever John was a bully to – where someone would say is being a bully, it's because the person that he was quote-unquote bullying was trying so hard to get over with him. I'm just like, dude, not everyone's going to like you. John just – maybe he doesn't like you. Like, you don't have to be – you don't have to prove your point and defend – you know, if he says you're a dork and he hates you, you don't have to prove to him you're not a dork and that he should like you. Just let it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Selling yourself is the best thing on the planet. If somebody sells for me, I will stay on that. I will beat a dead horse. Like, I'll bring it back to life, resuscitate it, and then kill it again.
I heard a story once. Paul Heyman told me this story about how JBL was needling Edge on a bus overseas. And needling him. Edge was pretty new to the company. Needling him. And Edge, sort of, JBL had a beer in his hand, a bottle of beer or a can. And Edge just stood up and, like, swatted the beer out of his hand and said, let's go right now. I'm sick of it. And from that moment on, you know, JBL was like, oh, calm down, sweetheart. And then everything was smooth over and he didn't mess with him ever again. I think that
Can any of you two recall a time being there that someone stood up like that?
Jib, Joey Styles did. I mean, a bunch of people did. You don't hear that.
Johnny Mundo.
Nitro.
Yeah, John Morrison.
Nitro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nitro stood up to him one night. There was something JBL didn't like the way that him and Miz had sold at the end of their match, or how they had celebrated. They hadn't celebrated enough, furiously enough, or whatever. So he was angry, and he was kind of getting up. And Johnny just basically snapped at him and told him to mind his own business. And they almost went at it. And, John's very vocal. He's very opinionated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not like, I don't know, it's not like an insurmountable thing. You mm-hmm. stand up to him or just ignore it and it'll go away. Like Sean said before, you know, the ones that just kept getting harassed were the ones that just kept going back for more.
Yeah. Interesting. Sean, you said you had you stood up to him one time?
Well, I wasn't even standing up to him. It was just, I don't remember the exact scenario. I actually forgot it even happened. Ken just brought it to my attention a couple, days ago. But we were sometimes when you go overseas, when you leave your house to when you get home, it's an 18-day loop for the overseas tours. And we were day, 13 or 14 or 15 into an 18-day loop, and John was in the main event.
It was day 18.
It might have been the last night of the loop. Yeah, and then we come back, and in those days you're miserable, you're tired, you just want to shower and get on the bus and get the hell out of there. Mm-hmm. So whoever's on last, usually they come back to an empty locker room or an empty building. And for some reason that night, probably just because it had been going on all trip and stuff. And then I wasn't by the monitor watching the main event, which John was in, I guess, and then. He came back and he just picked me as his target. A bunch of people weren't watching, but me specifically goes, Sean Daivari doesn't need to watch the main event. Sean Daivari knows everything about everything in wrestling. Sean doesn't have to watch the main event. He's good. He's got it. And I said, no, you've been doing the same match 17 nights in a row. I could call every single move you did. I could tell you exactly what happened. I could tell you what beats you took for the crowd to get involved. I seen it. No, I don't need to watch it tonight. And then actually it was the night before, I think Benoit and Ray were tagging. And I was glued to the monitor for that one in the main event. I was excited to see it. We hadn't seen it in the last, 15 days. Mm-hmm. And I said that to him. And then the only reason I said it like that was because it was in front of other people. If he pulled me aside and privately said it to me, sorry, John, I'll make sure to watch next time. But if he calls me out in front of everybody, I said exactly what it was the case and true. I wasn't fabricating nothing. And what did he come back? The only thing he could retort with would be a lie. And he didn't. And it was over.
Very interesting.
But what I'm saying is, I know a bunch of guys that would be like, no, 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 John, I was watching it. I wasn't in the shower. No, I saw the whole thing. No, no, I'll make them. If you put it over, then it gives them something to play with.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. Ken?
No, that's exactly what I would call it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. Yeah, good stuff.
I will say that, that kind of harassment and needling and whatever you want to call it, that hazing is sort of gone away in the business.
Mm-hmm.
It's non-existent.
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore. It's the locker rooms are very safe places to be. They're good places to be.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
You got wrestlers come from all walks of life. You got in our own wrestling school here at the Academy, we have people who are ex-drug addicts, recovering drug addicts, who we've got a guy that works for the main office in Target and corporate.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, our youngest student is 16 years old. Our oldest student is 40 years old. And we all come from all different walks of life. And I think it's one of the only places that I've ever been where there truly isn't a lot of, where there's just these tight-knit little groups. Everybody tends to hang out with everybody.
Yeah.
Of course, you get your smaller groups that split off because you're riding together or whatever, but, everybody tends to get along.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's awesome. You said the oldest is 40 years old. Is the boogeyman lying about his age again?
I'm 30.
No, he lost at 30. He's shooting 40.
How old are you? 30. 30. 40.
Boogie,
okay.
I'll tell you what, Boogie Man, he must be 50 something now.
Yeah.
And he looks fantastic. He looks the same. I just saw him this last weekend, and he's still in great shape.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. One more time, plug the academy. Let them know where it is. Let them know the site. And you've already explained the success. But for those, you know, I get a whole lot of listeners. And so anyone across the – I've looked at numbers. And I have people – I don't know who you recruit, but I've got people – a lot of people who listen from the UK as well, so I don't know.
Hey, I'll tell you one thing, dude. Like when I say success, the success is going to be for the kids. All that stuff I was, you know, joking about at the beginning. Like the success is going to be for the kids. Like me and Ken really aren't getting that much out of this yet. Obviously, for us, it's a business endeavor, and obviously, it's great to do a job you love, and we love doing this. But I always tell the kids, like, dude, just pretend, hypothetically speaking. We go out of business tomorrow. What do you want to get out of this? You can get anything you want out of this place. Like, take advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what's the social media? What's the website?
So you can.
The website is theacademyprowrestling.com, and you can. We have tons of information on the site about our training, about our basic curriculum. And when I say curriculum, it's just, when from time to time, when we really get started, rocking and rolling in the class, we just, hey, what do you guys want to learn today? Let's learn some new stuff. And a couple guys will throw out different things. And, you know, so we cover all aspects of the business from your character development to the way that you conduct yourself as a business professional, how you go about seeking employment from, you know, the WWE, TNA to local indie promotions. So we try to help you figure out, you know, how to get your name out there, how to promote yourself. And we cover promos. We have a specific area upstairs where we watch promos. We cut promos. We have a big, giant projector where we watch that's hooked up to the WWE network, and we just can watch matches and dissect things and break everything down. So yeah, go to theacademyprowrestling.com and you can sign up for a 30-minute free session where you come in and just basically sit down with Sean and I, and we show you around and talk about how you want to go about achieving your dreams.
Awesome. Once again,
you can also reach us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm sorry, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's all the Academy Pro Wrestling, I believe.
Academy,
correct, Sean?
Yep, everything is the Academy Pro Wrestling, except for the Twitter is the Academy SOPW, which stands for the School of Professional Wrestling. You can also find us on AOL and CompuServe on Web TV. We also have a MySpace page coming up soon.
Oh!
Wow. Yeah, so we're on the cusp of things.
Are you revamping MySpace?
Revamping? This is a new thing, man. You can find us on altavista.com. You can search for us on Lycos.
Nice.
Excite.
That is awesome.
All these
Netscape?
Things. MSN Web TV.
Well, yeah. Are you going to be on Netscape as well?
What's that?
Are you going to be on Netscape as well?
No, we can't afford that stuff.
Oh, okay. All right. All right, well, once again, ladies and gentlemen, the School of Professional Wrestling, Sean Navarri, Ken Anderson. Now, here's the thing. You've been on three times now. I think you guys are like the Steve Martins of SNL of the Pancakes and Power Slam show. So, no.
We're in the three-timers.
It's one of those things. It's one of those things like, you know, the five-timers club, you know, like on SNL. I'm a big SNL buff from like 87 to like 90, like 99. And like Dan Aykroyd and, you know, Belushi, the brother was a part of the cast and died, but the other brother was Jim and John, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So... Yeah, so you had so like
Eddie Martin.
Eddie, yeah. Well, he was a part of the cast. But you had like five timers. Like who's the guy? Alec Baldwin. He's like a five timer now, I think. And so I think that Ken Anderson and Sean Devari will be approaching the five timers club for the Pancakes and Power Slam show. So
yep,
I'm looking forward
to it.
Next time
you have us on,
Ken
will make sure to take his gloves off in the center of the podcast. And,
yes.
Everything will be good to go.
Be sure to take your boots off, too.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
You're right. Well, thanks for having us on. I appreciate it.
Real quick. Here's my – I just thought about this. I was just about to close, but I just thought about this. So are you both still wrestling dates, or are you both kind of going into your retirement phase?
I am not. I am still wrestling, still actively wrestling just about every weekend.
I just saw.
I am taking bookings when I want to. Trust me, my phone's not ringing off the hook. But when bookings come in that I want to do, I do them. Like I got a handful coming up, and then. But right now, it's kind of a good thing for me because I'm not super healthy, but I'm way better than I was a couple months ago. So like I feel like this summer I could be able to try and make an effort of you know accepting more bookings.
Okay. Good. All right, so listeners who are bookers, you heard that there. I just saw a video. I asked the question, but it's funny. I just saw a video recently of Ken Anderson. You were a champion of something. It was a video that was going viral, and you were like, I think you were like going back and forth with the kid or something.
I super kicked the midget.
Yeah, the midget. Yeah, that's what it was. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. Yeah, that was funny. I actually shared it on my Facebook,
one of the
wrestling Facebook page. That was hilarious.
One of the best things I've ever done in my career. First one was with the midget at WrestleMania. Uh-huh. One of the most memorable moments of my career. And just recently, a few weeks ago, when I got to super kick that kid, he was it was great. It was a lot of fun.
It was hilarious. All right, Ken, Sean, thank you so much for being on the show, man. Looking forward to having y'all again.
Yep.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Have a good night.
See you.
Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. What a wonderful interview. As always, as expected, Ken Anderson, Sean Devari, some really, really good, interesting things about their time with Undertaker and their stories with JBL. It was just been something fun, and we got it. So thank you so much for Ken Anderson and Sean Devari. Once again, they win the Pancakes and Power Slam show award of the only two wrestlers that's ever been on my show three times in 5 years. So congratulations to them, and looking forward to having them again, you know, soon. And there's always things to talk about. They're going to be hopefully five timers. So I'm looking forward to that. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we got an action packed show. Let's bring on the co-host with the most, Evan Tech Proud of Under the Mat Radio. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Tired, but that's life, right? A few days,
absolutely.
Always busy days for us.
Absolutely.
Good to hear our good old brother Ken Anderson. It's funny, like, I don't know if you got the same Feather Stone, but I did see Ken at the VIP party at Nash's. He was working there, but wasn't able to say hi to him. But good to see that Ken and Sean are doing good as always.
Yeah, I didn't get to see him.
You know, I think he came in late. I think once you left, I think Ken came in like a little later. I did get to see him, I didn't see Sean at all. But Ken's a good guy. I know Sean's a good guy too.
Mm-hmm.
Good to hear that.
Oh, yeah. Both of them are really, really cool people. Ken and I are actually been talking because he actually has a podcast, too. And you told me that he was there when I was about to leave. I still had some work to do. When I left, I didn't get a chance. I was tired, and I still had things to do, and I was ready to go. But it was a very, very fun evening, very, very fun weekend. It was good. Ken has a podcast, and it's funny because Gunner when I interviewed Gunner a few years ago, Gunner was saying how cool Ken was. It's like, as you know, and as many listeners know, I think just about every listener know, I'm very local with my strong Christianity. and Ken is an atheist, and so
he's the opposite.
Yeah, we've had some very respectful and civil conversations over Facebook. We chat on Facebook just leisurely, he actually offered for me to come on his podcast to discuss that. So the offer's there, and we're trying to figure out a date, and so looking forward to it. He's very respectful toward my beliefs, and he's open to listen, you know. When we talked about that, about me coming on his podcast, I said, you know, I've been in ministry for a long time, and I've had many, many conversations with atheists, so that's definitely nothing new. But I'm always willing to talk to someone who is willing to listen, not you know, having a conversation just to debate and just to go back and forth. So
right.
I'm not, you know, I don't have time for that. I have time for just open conversation. So he's willing to do it.
There's a conversation based upon just hearing the other person's viewpoint of why they feel how they feel, why their viewpoint is what it is, and as far as this informative, as far as the educational route, of course, there's no harm done. But once you start going to see the schematics of the arguing and who's right, who's wrong, who's better, there's no time for that. Like, I know Ken told me we interviewed him about his podcast, and like you, I've talked to him all. Even I'm even cordial with someone who's a certified witch. So I don't really talk about my personal life much, but I just a few weeks ago gave her a ride home. I ran into her at the supermarket, and I was just nice to her and her mom, and she was raised a Catholic. But you know, we have our conversations here and there. But at the end of the day, I know if she knows if she needed something, I'll be there for her. If I needed something, she'll be there. So, something wrong with making the world go around. You have a lot of people feel different ways. It's like the business, the people, you know, what's right and what's wrong, and different styles, but. No, just everybody out, as long as anybody's listening, then that's cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that platform to share the gospel. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, I'm excited about it. I really am. I'm not going to preach or anything, but I'm just going to, share my personal testimony and lay down the facts as the facts are interpreted, and and there you go. So we'll see. I'll definitely let people say, keep people updated on that. And there you go. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here are the headlines. Here we go. it's so funny because there's a delay, I'm a perfectionist when it comes to live TV. When it comes to live, this is a perfectionist period, but especially when it comes to the podcast, because we actually have advertisers and there's money coming in and things like that. It's so funny, and I just love things to be just so, by the book and just, just follow and things like that. I can't stand dead air. So when that happened, it was funny.
Dead air is never good.
Yeah, but it's funny because it reminds me of one of our staff members of Crave Wrestling. A good friend of mine. He was a co-host here for 4 years, Derek. We actually talked a few times. We conversed, and he wished all the best to the Pancakes and Power Slam show because of his schedule. He co-hosted for 4 years and had to change his schedule, and he's not on the show now, but he's just doing just very supportive of the show. And I talked to him last week. He was talking about how he's so sad that he can't come on the show anymore. But it's funny because every time there was some type of glitch at all, he would do this thing. He would like intern, he would go to an intern. And it's so funny, 5 years later, there was for those who listening, listen 5 years ago or listen to archives, every time he would say intern, spoiler alert, breaking news, there was never an intern. but it was so cool to say. it was cool. So what I thought about when he said when that happened, and that was that
big
glitch.
Glitch.
There, first thing I thought was intern.
Funny. Yeah.
Yeah. That was really
second
cool.
Delay.
That's, right.
That's death. That's death.
Right. That dead air is like, oh no. But yeah, all you advertisers, you're good to go. It was a great interview, and it's a great show. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Nia Jax botches a shoulder breaker. Oh man, I have that up on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page.
Oh man,
up there. I had to take the video and put that up on the page because when I saw that, I said, "Here's the thing." Now I've been critical of Nia Jax. I think that she has a lot of potential. I think the fact that she's like a very large, monstrous style female competitor is really good for WWE because that can draw a lot of heat and make someone really, really over that they want to make as a babyface.
Right.
So she's
right.
Perfect. She has the perfect the presentation is perfect. I've been very critical of the wardrobe. I do not like the wardrobe at all. But her as a figure is great. I think she did really good in NXT of putting Bayley over when they had that match takeover and Bayley won with the chokehold. I think that was great. That really made Bayley, you know, shine as a babyface. But on Raw, I mean, there's just so much greenness in Nia Jax, and it's very apparent. And she's not, I mean, she's so awkward with just her moves. She's not fluid at all. And, you know, and it's one of those things that I know that Nia Jax is happy for the opportunity. But it's one of those things, like, if I had any pull in the WWE, I would have not allowed Nia Jax to come up to the main roster. Not because she's not good, because it's premature. Just like Dana Brooke, premature.
Yeah.
And both of them have potential, but it's just so premature. It was such a bad idea to bring them up to the main roster, and they need to develop. They need to work on the craft before, because their characters, you know, back in the day, both of us are very traditionalists. We watched decades of wrestling. You know, back in the day, you would have wrestlers that weren't good wrestlers at all, but their characters were strong enough that they could get away.
Right.
You know what I mean? They could get away with without being good wrestlers.
Right.
I mean, Andre the Giant was never known as a good wrestler, but he's one of the most popular wrestlers of all time just because of his character being so strong. But with Nia Jax, she's not there yet. You know what I mean? So she's got so much to go.
But back then, you had the territory. And
Some
of these guys, we would watch. By the time we would see these guys on TV, whether it be Mid-South or Deep-South or Texas or Georgia, even WWE or WWF or WWF then.
NWA.
Some of these guys then, NWA, some of these guys had five, eight, 9 years of working on a territory that we didn't even know before we even got on camera. And you got to wrestle around the world with different styles. You know, look at Jerry Lawler, a lot of four kids know Jerry Lawler's a commentator. They have no idea the history that Lawler's done with.
He was huge in Memphis.
Huge in Memphis, you know, him and the Jarrett. So it shows that the state of WWE is animating these stars. They're struggling to make new women stars, female stars. That's why you have to pull. It's like baseball. You know, I'm a huge baseball fan. It's like baseball. If a lot of your main guys are gone, sometimes you have to call up somebody from AAA or even AA to the main roster. No, they may not be ready, but they got it for that spot. They just got to learn on the go. If anybody listening they don't understand how baseball works, of course, you have the major leagues, which is the top. You have the minor leagues. You have AAA, which is the level right before the majors. You have AA, which is under that. You have A ball, which is single, which is A ball, just like the lowest of the lows. So it's the same way with WWE. Their women division, it's like, who do you really have? You got the brand split, and then you got split with divas you do have coming on, the Raw and SmackDown. Nia Jax. I think she's a pretty monster. She has a good look. I hate the outfit. She, and we talked about this on the show earlier tonight and was laughing because my staff was putting memes about it laughing. And then she, like, it's not like she's not like most girls. She almost killed Charlotte. And it's like, that's the golden girl. That's yeah. Ricky Flair's daughter. And it's not just that. Charlotte is good in the ring. She has the presence. She's an attractive lady. She can wrestle. And she almost killed her with the shoulder break. I'm looking like, dude, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
She's on her head. And not only that, I didn't know.
She rolled over.
Right.
She fell on her head. And how she fell, her body weight went forward. So, like,
right.
her head and her body almost touched each other. It was terrible.
And not only that, I didn't even know about it today that my correspondent told for Ephesus and Queen mentioned, because they had left my room for a second, the room I was about to roll on, is that she didn't catch Charlotte. Charlotte went for the moonset. I didn't go back and watch it before the show. She didn't catch Charlotte. Charlotte fell on her face. She was like, open your arms. You have to catch him. It was like the Tim Snuka thing when he didn't catch Taker in Mania 25. It's like, I feel bad for him because, one, let's be honest, she say she's a Samoan. She's not going nowhere. She's not. She has the unique look that WWE needs because all the other women, they're pretty. They look nice. They're pretty. They're small model chicks. So you gotta have that 180. You gotta have the chick that's the opposite. You have Nia Jax, and who else right now on the roster do you have that looks different? I mean, they brought Tamina out SmackDown, which is green, and you know she keeps showing up and leaving. You know, of course, novel something like that. So, like I said, with Nia Jax, it's so bad for her. But hey, Featherstone, it could have been another Jackie Gayton and Trish Stratus. He can't get no worse than and I have that VHS tape. He can't get no worse than
Oh, man. Jackie Gayton and Trish Stratus.
It could be worse. It could be Jackie Gayton, or it could be Gail Kim when she first showed up in WWE when she got knocked out cold
for
her first match on Raw.
Oh, that's another one. That's another one. No way.
Oh, man.
It was Gail Kim knockout. Yeah. Pre-surgery. I wrote a piece on Matt Sydal, and he said that he was asked if he was going to go to the WWE, or does he prefer going to WWE, and he said, I prefer New Japan. Of course, his relationship with New Japan soured as of last September when he got arrested for having some enhancements in his car.
He's addicted to it. Addicted enhancements.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's had some violations of WWE, multiple violations of WWE. I've talked to him on the phone outside of my interview that I had with him about a year and a half ago. He's an eccentric guy. He's an eccentric guy, and from my interaction, not a bad guy. I love his, you know, I was listening to his interview today actually that I had with him, and really, really good, you know, takes on the wrestling business. And you know, he's been doing this for 17 years. And it's funny because he's younger than I am, and he's been doing it for 17 years. He's got some time. I think he started like 15, 16 years old. So you know, he knows this stuff, but it's like can't get his hands off that weed, man. So he's got to lay off the weed, and you know, hopefully New Japan picks him back up because he's a great hand. I think he's very underrated. I love watching him in the ring. He's, you know, I think when ECW was still around, they were pushing him. He was beating like Mark Henry, and I remember him fighting Tony Atlas. You know, but they really wanted to make him somebody. Of course, they were making. He was kind of like in the middle of the road, and then the Airborne really helped him out. He went sour to me when he just beat Jericho randomly. That was terrible to me. But Jericho's always that guy. Like, you see somebody, obviously he saw something in Evan Bourne to make him, you know, put him over. It was no storyline, nothing. I mean, I just wish Jericho is like Austin a lot of times. Like, just, you know, if I'm going to put someone over, at least get some type of story behind it, you know. But he put him over. But other than that sour moment, I've been a fan of Evan Bourne. I've been, or Matt Sydal in the indies. And I wish that I follow him back in the day, Wrestling Society X back in the early 2000s.
I
was a big fan of that show. He has so much potential. I was happy when he won the junior tag titles with Ricochet and the junior six-man tag team championships as well. He's I think like 34, 35 now. And
yeah, about that.
Yeah, and I think he's like at that. I don't see like a big push to be a singles champion somewhere. Maybe if ROH, you know, brings him back, he can be like TV champion. I would love a match with him and Marty Scurll. But I think he's at this point now where he's just kind of there, you know. So that's what we have with Matt Sydal now.
Yeah, I always loved his in-ring work. I've been around him a few times. Had a few at ROH shows at, you know, different parties, and I had him on my show as well, talked to him off air. He's very eccentric, but good mind for the business. Always loved his in-ring work. I just think WWE, this isn't the place for him.
I agree.
WWE is the land of the giants. If you're not a big guy or even middle guy, you're not going to last there too long. I know they have the cruiserweights right now, the whole cruiserweight division, which, you know, for somebody like Lance Sydal to think it would be less than him to even be there. I think somewhere like a RH, Impact, Lucha Underground, or Japan, overseas, where he could just be free and kind of be himself with what's best for him.
Yeah. I think he could get over a lot in Lucha Underground. I mean, talk about like a world champion. I don't see him in a world champion in some major. Like, I don't see him as ROH world champ. Impact, no, I don't see him there. He could be there. I don't see him as world champ, but I could see him as Lucha Underground champion, though.
He could be.
Mm-hmm. I think he has enough star power to really do something there. So, I mean, John Morrison just won the title recently, and he's like 37 or something like that. So,
yeah.
So yeah, 37, 38. So there's some life there. Oh, let's plow through the rest of the headlines for this week. The original plan winner of the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal up until the same day was Sami Zayn. But it's, you know, like I threw out in my piece, it's one of those things that I don't think that the WWE really has plans for Sami Zayn. I just really think he's a good hand. I think he's one of those dudes that he definitely did better in NXT, would have done better in NXT, but he, you know, it made perfect sense that he got called up because he's such a vet in the business. It's like, you know, as we saw with the Superstar Shakeup, even his first match on SmackDown was a loss. So he's there. It's a lateral movement. Like, he was there on Raw to put people over and to make other people look good, and that's exactly what he did on SmackDown. I mean, the match was really good between him, AJ, and Corbin. But at the same time, he did the exact same thing that he does on Raw. He puts his all into it, and just to make somebody else look good. So to me, tonight on SmackDown just proved that it's a lateral move for Sami Zayn, and I don't see anything, you know, higher than what we saw at Raw.
Do you know the difference between Sami Zayn and Seth Rollins?
One wore a mask and one didn't.
No. I mean, currently, you know, I'll generically.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because currently is that the only difference between them series. I know it's obvious, but basically what you're explaining, which I agree with, is the company push.
Mm-hmm.
If Rollins didn't have Trips behind his back pushing him, he would be in the same boat. Good talent, looks good, fans like him, but he's at that cusp, he just can't get over the mountain. And that's exactly where Sami Zayn is at. Sami Zayn's a great talent. He can wrestle. I like his mic work a lot better than Seth Rollins. You know, we cannot stand Seth Rollins on the mic.
I agree.
But Rollins had the machine back in him, which and I don't have anything against Rollins. I like Rollins. He was Tyler Black. But Sami Zayn, same thing. He looks good. He's decent on the mic. He has a problem when he can wrestle, but the machine just isn't behind him. So now it's just he's just floating around, going through the motions, making everybody look good. He's losing. He got beat up by Strowman back and forth. You know, he did beat Rollins that time, only because they were setting up the whole Rollins and Triple H feud. Now he's on SmackDown. Great triple threat match with Corbin and AJ. It's not like you needed any more evidence of how great AJ is. It's like phenomenal. Corbin is a good talent, you know, he is. But then, of course, you have Zayn, the one that takes the pinfall. It's like, well, why can't Corbin take it? But like you said, is I like Zayn. I do. I just, and that's somebody, like I said, if he was at a Lucha Underground, if he was at an Impact, if he was at an ROH, he easily could have been killed the world champion.
Mm-hmm.
But you know how WWE is. You know how the way the land is there. So.
Yep.
And that's no, like I said, there's no nothing against WWE. We just know how things work there. Zayn will continue to be that middle. He'll continue to be the honky tonk man esque and the Ron Bass and Rick the Model.
I think he's more like the Tito Santana.
Tito Santana, yeah, you know.
Yeah, maybe a mid card title run, maybe one mid card title run, but that's it. But it, you know, even with Tito made the Hall of Fame, so I don't know if Sammy will, but Tito did.
Yeah,
Reba.
Yeah, Reba, El Matador. See, Tito was great, man.
Tito was El Matador. Tito. Oh man, you made me do it again. Man.
Oh, I can make it go again. We're not gonna just mention up Saba Simba.
No way. The worst part of Tony Atlas ever. Oh man, that was terrible.
Oh man,
that was terrible. Samba Simba, ladies and gentlemen.
Tito Santana, great guy. Loved him in the ring. One of the nicest guys. His huge change, by the way. I don't know if you ever met him in a place to talk to him. So nice.
Mm-hmm.
Tito, Sammy, just you know, he's just stuck in the middle ground.
Yeah. That's him. Yeah. So real quick, Aaron Rex done with TNA. That's it. He came last summer. He came the end of last summer, and less than a year later, he's out of there. I mean, I liked him when he was Damian Sandow. When he was Damian Mizdow, I think that was the best thing that he did. Then he started mocking, like doing the Hogan parody, and WWE did such a terrible, terrible job with the pop that he got from, you know, the Mizdow. When, you know, WrestleMania 31 in Santa Clara, they popped when he eliminated the Miz. But the Big Show took that heat away from that. I'm like, why would they do that? I mean, Big Show winning, it meant nothing. But Mizdow winning, it would have meant, you know, much more. But it's just, and when he went to TNA, I mean, he was in, his shape wasn't as good as it was in WWE. And then it was no character. He said, yeah, he's going to change some things up. But there was nothing about Damian Sandow or Aaron Rex. There was absolutely nothing about his character as a babyface in TNA that I could get invested in. And it's like, and then he did the whole Liberace style flamboyant Adrian Adonis stuff. And that was absolutely terrible. Revamp of him. And it just, he's rightfully so, he's done with TNA. He although he was grand champion, his run at TNA was abysmal.
You said anything I was going to say. The Liberace thing, I'm like, what is this? It made no sense. It's... They were him. The biggest thing he had
was the better than Saba Simba.
It was better than Saba Simba, but I don't think it was as good as Ladytron.
I agree.
I'm friends with Ladytron. I had the Guerrero. Gosh, that's so bad. good thing we survived the great years and the bad years.
Yes.
Like you said, his hottest moment was Ms. Dow. He got released. He was big. Everybody wanted him. And I just think he just should have kept. And granted, it's the business. He tried different curtains. At least he tried it. It just wasn't working. I looked at him. I'm like, what is he doing? It just,
yeah.
So now it's what's next for him. I think if he uses the card he had in WWE as Demi and saying, they'll kind of tweak it, just use a different name, then you're welcome, and then being sophisticated. People forget that he was a part of that old tag team over 10 some years ago called Casey James and Ivan Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
And Undertaker's wifey, Michelle McCool, was the manager. And Sandow went away in Puerto Rico and overseas and busted his tail a good 3-4 years or so and reinvented himself before he came back. So, like I said, hopefully he can redefine his track. I think he's a really good talent. Impact. And I'm going to blame Impact. It's whoever's booking. Blame good old Dutchie and Jeffy.
It was terrible. Yeah, it was absolutely terrible.
Jeffy Dutchie and Brucey.
And Brucey. But as far as I heard that Bruce isn't doing a lot of creative anymore. They're really pulling him for the because of the podcast, and he's not doing a lot of internal stuff just because he still wants to be heavily. Invest in the podcast because that podcast is doing such great numbers. So, all right, real quick, we only got a few minutes left on the show. Let's talk about the Superstar Shakeup. Let's get your thoughts on both Raw and SmackDown as far as the shakeups were concerned.
It was all right, confusing. The shakeup is a draft. You have Raw. It's like, okay, you show Angle and Bryan or in Shane. For some reason, they forgot to put Shane in the graphic. They kept showing Daniel Bryan and Angle. They keep forgetting Shane is a GM, too. And the question is this. How did they go about, how are these guys picked? How are these superstars picked to be on these shows? Raw starts off great. Vince playing John Cena. Maurice playing Nikki. Okay, great. They're on the show. Cool. No problem. It's like, how was the actual process of them choosing? That's what I was wondering. It was like random. Yeah. It was like, okay, Miz is on the show. Ambrose is on the show. Okay, cool. Vegas with Raw. What's the point of having a shakeup when you move two superstars that are already feeding on one brand and you move them simultaneously on the other? The same match that you want to see from a different night, different color. You go from blue to red to blue. I like the Miz being on Raw. I like Ambrose being on Raw. Why does all of the Shield need to be on Raw? Move Seth Rollins to SmackDown. Reigns isn't going anywhere because he's the new face. He's taking over for Cena when he finally leaves. It is, Joe attacking Seth. Okay, that's cool. I like the fact Angle was in the ring. Four kids don't even remember that Angle went against Joe on TNA, but anything that ever happened in WWE doesn't exist. David Herald is posting something hilarious that says Samoan Lives Matter after watching Raw. That was hilarious. it was just the monster among men. I kind of like that nickname because they keep repeating it down your head. Monster among men. This attack from Roman Reigns, the air quote murder him or attack him. You clearly see the dummy, and it's like it makes no sense. Roman now has the most heat in the company. He defeats Taker. He did a great job last weekend, not saying much, but this is my yard now. But yet, Monster Among Men throws him over the balcony with a stretcher, beats the crap out of him. What does that say about Reigns? So he's strong enough to beat Taker.
What does it say about The Undertaker?
What does it say about The
Undertaker putting over Reigns? 2 weeks later, he gets pummeled. I'll let you finish, man. We got. I think we'll talk about more about this next week as far as just what this means for The Undertaker.
You could have just said Strowman beat the crap out of Reigns backstage something quick. You didn't have to go all over the place with the avalanche and stuff. And then what happens with Reigns? He should be out for the next 3 to 4 weeks because WWE, the Reigns is going to show up within 2 weeks. Just like The Rock did when he got ran over by avalanche, vehicular manslaughter by the NWO. Just like Big Show fell off the Cobo Hall, he showed up the same night. And it was just overkill. Miz is there. Ambrose is there. Mickie James shows up with Alexa Bliss. Okay, cool. We get to see no fight again for the 100th time. Alexa Bliss, so like her interaction with Sasha Banks. In the SmackDown, you have Bobby Sashes on SmackDown. Well, there's more. That's fresh meat for JBL. You have Charlotte on SmackDown. I was excited about that. Oh, Bray Wyatt shows up on Raw. He just randomly downloads, and now he's speeding with Sin. Nobody knows, but he wants to do what he wants. But yet, he's still showing up on SmackDown now, so he gets to work both shows. He forgot he has to go on Payback and Free Orton, but now he's a Raw superstar. It's so much confusion. It's like, what's going on? Jinder Mahal is on the juice. That's why I tweeted Jinder Juice. He forearms the mess out of Finn Balor, and you want me to believe Finn Balor looks like a sixth grader, and Jinder Mahal looks like a grown man, beats Jinder Mahal with a stomp. And I ain't talking about my good old buddy Kevin Sullivan, Taskmaster foot stomp, a flying stomp.
Yeah. And I agree, man. I think there's some great points. Real quick, I was not a fan of Miz going. I think he was getting so much good stuff on SmackDown. I don't see him. I see him as a potential main eventer, world champ material on SmackDown, not on Raw, especially with Lesnar at the helm. Ambrose, indifferent. I really don't care. Him moving over, I really didn't have anything good or bad to say, but them both moving over in the same segment, it was just the same stuff, different day. It was terrible. Kurt Hawkins going over meant nothing.
I forgot about that. What is it?
Yeah, that was terrible. The Revival beat the New Day twice. I'm like, you breaking records, but they beat them twice. But, of course, you know, as we saw on SmackDown, they're coming over to SmackDown. So it was kind of like them kind of laying down before they went to SmackDown. Yeah. I like the Rollins. The Rollins promo was boring until Angle gave him the rub. So I was a fan of that.
He was
just putting him over. I mean, I don't know the exact words he said, but he got in the ring and he was talking about you're one of the most, best people here, and it's true. Finn Balor, I think Finn Balor should have went to SmackDown. I think that he should have been like the main event person, because there wasn't a lot of main eventers that went over to SmackDown to me.
Exactly.
And I think Finn Balor would have been that guy. That's the person I would have picked. I don't know if this is going like week two or something like that, because they're saying like New Day is coming. So I don't know exactly, if they're going to allow them to, like in the coming weeks, is it going to last 2 weeks? And then Daniel Bryan saying something about it's not going to last. I mean, you can't defend the title, and it's just all types of it was just weird.
It's time to say things on the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. And I'm like, but it's like Owens goes to SmackDown, but you know, Jericho gets him on Raw and wants revenge, but Jericho doesn't appear on SmackDown. SmackDown's been
And apparently now it's good for the heavier man to wear suits. Why is Kevin Owens wearing a suit?
Yeah.
Well, what sense is that? He's always worn the T-shirt. Why is Joe wearing the suit? It looks dumb. It's like how Austin was wearing a suit. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
Why are we wearing suits now? I mean, I can use a reference, and I can even use that the Horsemen, when Flair came back and told Bischoff, you can't find me, Marie fired. You had Chris Benoit, who's still sitting there in the suit, Dean Malenko. I'm like, why are you even in suits? It looks weird. Like, all we ever see you in is just your tights. And then shout out the Cruiserweight division. They actually got a month. They actually, this shows where the Cruiserweight division is, how Vince thinks about them.
Yeah.
You have a segment, a 5 to 6 minute segment, which felt like 2 hours. TJ Perkins, we don't know who you are. You just like video games, I guess. You have Neville, the new Highlander, Dustin McCloud, which I like, his forehead looks funny. And you have Double A. And, I'm sorry, A-double. Aries, you have them have a backstage segment, right? With no microphone.
Like,
what else did you just say? Because I'm sure if it was Seth Rollins or Strowman or Reigns or Jericho, they always had mics. Some of them even walked to the ring with mics in their pockets. Sting had one in his coat. Ticket had one in his pocket. Everybody has mics. But it's the Cruiserweight division, so you have three guys talking backstage with no microphones.
Right.
6 minutes,
that's
all like an hour. And Randy Orton's champ, by the way. Randy Orton wears hoodies now and comes out with the championship, which no one cares. Eric Rowan downloads back with his new mask, and now I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah,
it's so confusing. It makes my head hurt.
All types of weird. Yeah. It was all types of weird. And then Primo and Epico, actually, that was kind of cool because they kind of changed it up a little bit. But like I said, no main eventers, you know, that really came to SmackDown. So their shakeup was just like, ugh. So, yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, real quick, Flavor of the Week. Just real quick, for lack of time, what WCW pay-per-view would you like to see back on WWE?
Bucko Stampede. No, I'm just joking. Battle Bowl. And the Will make the deal.
There you go.
If they get it right. War Games. War Games.
Yes,
War
that
games.
Was actually going to be my pick. War Games.
War Games.
I heard that there were some talks before, but never has panned out. But yeah,
yeah.
War Games.
Trips wanted it, but Vince didn't know.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for the 263rd episode of Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are marching down to the next monumental episode, I guess. You know, we're the 6-year anniversary, the 250th episode, whatever monumental episode you want to count in. So, we already did 250th, so the 300th episode. So, I think the 300th episode will be before the year episode, like maybe a few weeks before. But, ladies and gentlemen, Ken Anderson, Sean Devari, thank you so much for you guys for being on the show three times, the Three Timers Club, first ever Three Timers Club. Congratulations on that. And of course, Under the Mat Radio. Check them out on Tuesdays. Real quick, what time, Evan?
Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time.
Fantastic.
Check it out.
And ladies and gentlemen,
yes, intern. Space. They took out prices at Power Slam every Tuesday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio /
And the business, absolutely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have some fun next week. And Pancakes and Power Slams t-shirts selling pretty good. Check out the send an inbox to the Crave Wrestling Facebook page if you want a Pancakes and Power Slams t-shirt. Next week I'll be at Raw, so I'll give some live notes from live Raw next week. So, ladies and gentlemen, God bless you all. For Evan, I am Featherstone.
Yes.
You all have a blessed evening. And until next week, God bless. Goodbye.
See you later. God bless.